Weekly Spooky is brought to you by our generous supporters on Patreon. Get access to exclusive podcasts, videos, and more for as little as $1 a month when you go to weeklyspooky.com and click on the Patreon link. Your support has gotten us to 100 episodes, so join up today and help us create another 100 and beyond. Head over to weeklyspooky.com and join the Patreon.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday, and I know you know what that means. It's time for a little spooky in your weekly. I'm your host and narrator, Henrik Kuto, and this month is very special because we're headed to Strickfield, Ohio. That's right. We have a brand new mini-series starting today. 4 parts where we learn about the deadly secrets kept on the outskirts of town in an unsuspecting palatial estate. Oh, my friends, this is a fun and scary one. But first, I want to say a heartfelt thank you for listening to the show. And if you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcasting app. And while you're there, why not drop us a star rating? You know, on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts, we're at 98 reviews. That's right. We could make it to 100 if just 4 people decided to leave a rating. So please, if you don't mind, head over there and leave us a couple of stars, whatever you think is appropriate. I sure do appreciate it, and it helps new people discover the program. And, of course, it costs you nothing. So thank you to all who have already, and to all who will soon. Also, I want to say if anybody will be in Memphis, Tennessee this weekend, I'll be at the Joe Bob Briggs Drive-In Jamboree. Look for me wandering around with lots of popcorn and snacks. And if you want to support the Spooky in a more direct way, go to weeklyspooky.com. For as little as $1 every month, you get a bonus episode and so much more. But now, my friends, I don't know if you hear that, but I hear it. It sounds like the weather is turning from bright and sunny summer to a very dark and stormy night. So let's get to the first part of our scare. Murder Mansion by Rob Fields. Part 1. It's 4th of July night. I'm thinking maybe coming home from Shore City today wasn't such a hot idea. The weather app on my smartphone said it wasn't supposed to rain today. Just goes to show you can't always believe weather reports. I'm driving in what seems like a torrential downpour as I'm on my way back to Strickfield University. I spent a week in Shore City. You'd think that I was out on the beaches there, especially close to the 4th of July weekend. Not at all. While I could probably turn a lot of heads in a bikini, I wasn't there for that kind of vacation. No, I was working out a very challenging escape room. In fact, it was one of the more better-built ones I've done, especially when it was a contest with big money involved. When it comes to escape room contests, I enter as many as I know I can drive to. I really don't have a choice. If you could take a good look at me, you'd probably be thinking that you'd want to date me. However, once we'd go on said date, you'd soon wish you'd never met me. The main reason is that I eat way, way too much. Ever see Shaggy Rogers in the Scooby-Doo cartoons? If so, You've seen how much he eats, and he's a cartoon. Thanks to my ultra-high metabolism, I have to stuff my face the way Shaggy does. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now. I've got two huge bags of bacon double cheeseburgers in the passenger seat. Well, now one. I've just finished the first bag, and there are 15 burgers apiece in both bags. I'm not even feeling full yet. This is part of the reason why I do escape room contests for prize money. I work at the library at Strickfield U to both make a little money and get discounts. I have a scholarship that covers all my academic costs, but it doesn't cover much in terms of my food. Not when I have to eat so much of it. I won $5,000 in beating that escape room in Shore City, but it's going to be gone before too long. I'm going to have to look for some new contests when I get back to my dorm. These burgers are delicious, but the ones at DeNoyer's Grill are so much better. Thinking about it, maybe I should have ordered 3 bags of burgers. I've already eaten 3 more out of the second bag. And keep in mind that these are not sliders. Let's face it, the life of Bethany Martinson is a very lonely one. No guy wants to date me because of both my monstrous appetite and my mutant brain. I've come to find that guys don't really like girls who are much smarter than them. In fact, I have a superior IQ. I got to skip 2 grades in high school. I'm only 19, and I'm a sophomore at university. And then there are other guys that don't want to date a throwback to the 1960s. Ever see the kind of clothes the Scooby Gang wore? Well, picture Daphne's dress, but red. Purple leggings like hers, red and tan pumps, a white scarf, a blue headband, and cat-eye-lensed glasses. I'm listening to the Mamas and the Papas on the oldies station. To put it mildly, I just don't fit in with many of today's trends. Also, I've had girls from the Kappa sorority give me a hard time. They've seen me eat at a few all-you-can-eat buffets and started calling me Bethany the Boar. I swear, people can be so stupid and mean. Sometimes even I don't understand people. Still, I keep my head up high and keep moving forward. I don't know what those girls will do if they manage to graduate, but me, I'm a detective. I'll always have work. I just have to find things that pay. Thankfully, I've been able to find one escape room contest after another. In addition to the escape room contests, I've also been able to make some money helping police departments solve their toughest cases. Solving the cases gets me rewards. Truth be told, I don't like taking the rewards, but I've got to eat. Speaking of eating, I've just finished my last bacon double cheeseburger. 2 big bags of burgers, and I'm still not content. I'll be back in Strickfield in a little while. DeNoyer's Grill, here I come. Thinking about those big cheeseburger platters is already making my stomach growl with anticipation. The rain's really coming down now. I just have to take it easy so I don't go off the road. I want to make it to DeNoyer's Grill alive. I see the sign that says I'm only 5 miles from Strickfield now. However, I only manage 2 before I come up to the big detour sign in the middle of the road. Whoa, I utter when I see the bridge over the Castalia River is washed out completely. I remember driving across that bridge when I left Strickfield to go to Shore City. I'll have to follow the detour to get back into the village. I turn off and drive along a very curvy road. The storm continues to grow more and more. The lightning flashes are more and more frequent, and the rain is coming down in heavy, thick sheets. My eyes quickly open wide when I realize I'm being directed into the backwoods. You wouldn't believe how many horror stories I've heard about this area floating around campus. There are even a few Strickfield websites that have made creepypastas out of some of them, including stories about ghouls and cannibals. As a detective, I not only solve real-world cases, but I also dabble in the supernatural. I've actually debunked quite a few urban legends and haunted houses. Do I sound like I could be Dana Scully from The X-Files? Well, I wouldn't go that far. She's a skeptic to my being a believer. I've actually found a few houses that were really haunted in my life. None of them were in Strickfield. I'm still thinking about my very first one, which was an old woman who came back to take revenge on her grandson for murdering her to claim her fortune. I still get the creeps just thinking about it. I'd pull over and just wait out the storm, but I'm still hungry and need to get to Denoyer's Grill. I've got the windshield wipers working overtime here, but I still can't see much of anything except the rain and the lightning. As I'm rounding a long curve, a huge flash of lightning illuminates the road ahead of me, just enough for me to see a car right in the middle of the road. I scream and jam on the brakes, then I feel the impact, and my car dies. I know I'm okay, thanks to my seatbelt. I take a deep breath and compose myself. I'm going to have to call the police and have them come out here and clear this. Only, that's not going to happen. My smartphone screen is so badly damaged now that pieces of it just fell off. It must have hit just right against something in the crash. No way I'll be able to use it. Well, I can't just sit here in my car, not in the backwoods of Strickfield. I don't have an umbrella, so it looks like I'm taking an impromptu shower. I get out of my car to check the damage. It's dark, but I can see enough of the other car to scream. You're not going to believe this, but the other car is all burned up. In fact, there are three skeletons sitting inside. The only thing I can figure is the car hit a tree and exploded, based on how totaled the front of the car looks. Whoever these three people were didn't have a chance of getting out, and burned right down to their bones. As for the fire itself, I guess the rain put it out. I really don't have a choice. I've got to try to find a house somewhere so I can call the police and report this. I hope they can come ASAP. I'm okay now, but my ultra-high metabolism will burn up all those burgers I ate. Eventually, I'm going to be very hungry again. I just pick a direction and start walking. It's really windy here. I walk for about 15 minutes before the lightning flashes and reveals what looks like a plantation. Like the kind you read about in Civil War history. The huge mansion looks like it's definitely from that era. I would have never guessed the backwoods had mansions. But I can't be choosy, not in my situation. I need to at least take shelter inside, hopefully somebody's home so I can use a phone. I may even have to trouble them for some food. The wind blows even harder as I'm on the front porch. I'm ready to knock on one of the French doors. Then I notice one of them is just slightly open. I push on it to find it opens easily, and quickly step inside. The house is nicely lit, seems to have some kind of electrical power. "Hello?" I call out. "Is anyone home?" I call out some more, but get no replies. No, I spoke too soon. The door I came in through suddenly slams shut behind me. I turn back to the doors and try to open them. Neither of the doors nor the handles will budge. I move to the windows, but there are no latches to open them. Looks like I'm trapped in here. I'll take it for right now, since I'm out of the storm. I don't have a choice. I'm going to have to explore my new shelter. I'm dripping all over the floor as I start walking. I might as well have just come out of a swimming pool after being in it with my clothes on. Every now and then I call out and hope someone will hear me. After walking around for several minutes, I finally come into a huge living room. Yes! There are actually people in here. I already recognize three of them. In fact, I've seen these middle-aged men before, many times. The first one is John Riddle, who used to work for the 6th Precinct of the Erie City Police Department. The second is Brian Davenport, who used to work for the 10th Precinct of the Shore City PD. The last one is Ed Smith, who used to work for the 2nd Precinct of Dayton PD. I say used to, because I got them all fired. Remember when I told you police departments sometimes call me in to solve really tough cases? That's what happened to these guys. They're all former detectives. After I solved what were supposed to be some really tough serial killer cases, I'd read the top news stories about the cases being broken. I would also hear from my contacts that each detective had been fired. According to them, I made solving the cases look so easy. You'd think I'd never see the men again, right? Nope. Remember how I told you that I enter escape room contests? These guys have been at nearly every single one of them. They work together to try to win the cash prizes. I keep winning at the escape rooms and claiming the prizes myself. For my part, it's nothing personal. The men, however, have taken it quite personal and still resent me to this day. Even their looks right now are resentful. They hate me because I'm so much smarter than them. Not to toot my own horn. And I'm young enough to be a daughter to each of them. "Well, look what the cat dragged in," John Riddle sneers. "You didn't tell me your daughter was coming," Ed Smith jokes with Brian Davenport. Brian groans and bumps him with his elbow. "Piss off." I immediately notice the three men aren't wet in the slightest. Maybe they've been here a while. Who can say for sure? Then I see an older couple sitting in their own comfy chairs who look to be in their 70s. Both have gray hair and the man doesn't have a beard. They're dressed in clothes that match this plantation. I'm sorry, I tell them. "Is this your house? I didn't mean to just walk on in, but I had an accident out on the main road. Do you have a phone I can use to call for help?" The man replies to me. "Storm's nasty out there, ain't it? Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, young lady, but there ain't no phone in this house. Never has been. You're more than welcome to wait out the storm here." I sigh. "No phone?" "That's what he said," Ed Smith says rudely. "And don't look to us for a phone. Even if our phones got a signal here, we still wouldn't let you use one," Brian Davenport adds. The woman looks at me now. "Oh, you poor thing," she gets up. "Come on and I'll get you some fresh clothes to wear," she raises her finger. "You'll catch your death of cold if you stay in them wet clothes, not to mention you'll keep dripping all over my carpets. Now come on." I let her take me with her. After changing into dry clothes, which look like the same fashions that Dorothy and her husband are wearing, The woman brings me back to the living room. Well, she looks just like you back in your younger years, Dorothy, the man says. Now you don't go getting no ideas, August Grimm, she scolds. You keep your hands off this young chicken. August laughs a little and tells me to have a seat. I sit on a couch across from the three men. Yup, I think we got everybody here that needs to be here, August says. Then I remember. Those front doors are locked tight. I couldn't open them again. Yeah, they tend to stick like that when it rains heavy like such. Way the house has always been, August replies. Anyway, y'all want to go back out in that storm? I sigh. Not really. Then it's all settled, Dorothy says with finality. August, I'm thinking maybe it's time y'all share a little story with our guests. Don't mind if I do. August points to a portrait of a bearded man above the fireplace. That there's Beauregard Grimm, the founder of this here home. It's known only to a handful of people that he deserted the Civil War. Just didn't believe the way them other Confederate people believed, and he deserted. It took him some time, but he ended up here in the North. Came to this here spot on the map and decided to call it home. Began as a normal house. Beauregard made his life and fortune making traps. Now, we ain't just talking about stuff like bear and mouse traps here. No, he made actual traps that could keep a man locked up good and tight. Then, as he builds his glorious plantation, he gets himself an idea. I done told you he made his fortune here. He never done trusted nobody, so he decided to build special rooms in here at Grimm Manor. Built special kinds of traps out of them, he did. You get caught in one of them rooms, you better be able to figure your way out if y'all want to live. As a legend goes, if you're able to find and solve all the rooms, y'all get that fortune all to yourselves. Many have tried. He leans forward in his chair. All of them failed. In spite of the warnings Dorothy and I gave, they all ended up in their final resting place. He nods over his shoulder. In that there dirt nap out and back. From there, they became a part of Grimm Manor. After all, it ain't just people looking for Beauregard's fortune who come here. Many of those lost souls who died in the area find their way here too. Yes, they do. Now, y'all are more than welcome to spend the night and wait out the storm, long as y'all don't go off looking for the fortune. Y'all shouldn't be having a problem getting out of here in the morning. Y'all decide to go looking for the fortune. Well, then you were all warned. Could the house being locked up tight be a possible trap? I ask August. Done told you, honey, he replies. Them doors like to stick real good when there's a storm like that out there. And we get storms like that quite a bit here in Strickfield. Again, y'all want to go back out in the storm? We ain't stopping you. John Riddle gives me a dirty look. Looks like you finally found a place even you can't escape from. August looks at Riddle. Now how's that? Riddle points right at me. This little freak right here likes to play escape rooms. She's gotten out of every one. August raises an eyelid my way. Oh, really? I didn't appreciate Riddle's tone towards me. At least I can beat the escape rooms. Then I glance at all three of the former detectives. Unlike you. I calm down and look at August. I guess I'll stick it out here tonight and walk back to Strickfield in the morning. Can I trouble you for some food? I can pay you. Dorothy laughs a motherly laugh. Come on with me, young lady, and I'll take you and feed you. I hope you all have an appetite, because we got more than enough food here, and you keep your money. Ain't no good here. Thank you, I say and get up to follow Dorothy. The old woman takes me to the biggest kitchen I've ever seen. There are two huge refrigerators here. As soon as she opens one of them, my monster tummy growls with delight. I wonder if this sort of thing happened to Shaggy when he saw food. Okay, I know he's a cartoon, but still. Eat what you want, Dorothy tells me. Come on back when you're ready and I'll show you to your room for the night. I thank the old woman again. When she leaves, I open a refrigerator and grab the big platter of ham. Wow, I don't think I've ever eaten so good in my life. I could list everything I ate there, but again, this is part of the reason why guys don't want to date me. For the record, I did eat that entire ham platter. I've rarely ever been as content as I am right now, but I think I should be good until morning. Then I'm going to want a Neuer's grill for sure. When it's getting close to midnight, August and Dorothy take us and show us to our rooms. The men ended up staying downstairs, but Dorothy takes me up the extravagant ivy staircase. At the top, we turn off. Dorothy's talking to me about life here on the plantation. Soon we come to a bedroom at the end of the hall. "You'll be quite comfy in here, honey," she tells me. I thank her again for her hospitality and for putting me up for the night. I try to offer payment again, but she won't hear it. She says goodnight and leaves. I turn and examine my bedroom for the night. The first thing I see is another portrait of Beauregard Grimm near the four-poster bed. Not the same one as the portrait in the living room, but just as haunting. "It's only a picture, Bethany," I tell myself. "It can't hurt you." I look at it again and see it's still inanimate. I lock my door and undress. Then I gasp when I see the other naked girl in the full-length mirror and walk over to it. "Easy there, Bethany," I tell myself. And then I notice my reflection's eyes are red and my hair is violet. My eyes are normally green and my hair is red. I close my eyes and tighten my fists. "No, no, I'm not giving in. Leave me alone." Then I open my eyes and see my reflection still altered. My dark side is trying to emerge again. I didn't want to say anything, but my inner darkness is the biggest reason why I'm not intimate with others. I've had to struggle with it since my early days in high school. It's grown stronger since then, and it becomes more of a struggle to keep it inside. "You can't keep me locked up forever, Bethany," my reflection sings with a Brooklyn accent. I quickly turn away from the mirror, get into bed, and turn off the lamp. I wake up when I feel my tummy growling. "Really?" I ask it. "I just fed you a huge feast." I had that dream again about being in that hot dog eating contest last summer at Strickfield County Fair. Winning the contest was no problem, but I still dream about the event. Denoyer's Grill put up the hot dogs. I swear I could live at that greasy spoon. My tummy starts growling again. "Okay, okay, I'll get you some more of that delicious food," I tell it, and get out of bed. I put my borrowed clothes back on and leave my room. I walk downstairs and head into the kitchen. I feel so guilty for stuffing my face the way I do, but I just can't help it. If I could actually put on weight, I'd have been dead from morbid obesity a long time ago. Then I laugh a little when I think that a rich man would have to be the one to marry me. "You're being crazy now, Bethany," I tell myself as I dig into some chocolate silk pie. I leave the kitchen feeling content yet again. Again, you wouldn't believe all the food I just ate. I yawn and know I can't wait to get back into that nice, comfy bed. However, I decide to check out more of this mansion before I head back upstairs. Might as well, right? How often do you actually get to be in a big mansion like this? I walk until I enter the big living room. Looking at the windows, the storm just keeps raging on. Glad I'm in here where it's nice and dry. Then I wish I hadn't thought that last part, when the lightning strikes. I scream like holy hell when I see the bodies of August and Dorothy Grimm hanging on nooses, side by side. The lightning flashes again. They're definitely dead. Who the hell would have done this? This awful thing? Those people were so nice. My heart's pounding, like when I'm watching horror movies on those lonely nights. My many lonely nights. I can't help crying for the Grimms now. I can't go back to bed. I have to solve this mystery. I have to know who killed August and Dorothy Grimm. Before I can think about what to do next, I feel something land right behind me. When I turn my head to see what it is, the lightning flashes and reveals. I scream in utter horror when I see the ghostly phantasm wearing a long black cloak. Its face was a ghastly, grinning skull. It laughs a haunting, menacing laugh as it wraps its arms around me. I scream again as I feel it lifting me up quickly and out of sight. Well, my friends, I hope that's whet your appetite for terror, because we have so many more questions to find out next week. Is it really a coincidence those three detectives are in the house? Are they up to something dark and devious? And if so, were they the ones to kill that kindly old couple? Or is something else we don't even know about yet at play? So please come back next week for part two of Murder Mansion. I really appreciate it. Rob Fields has built an incredible miniseries for you guys. After all of you loved his Prom Queen Killer so much, I'm thrilled to have it for you. And speaking of being thrilled, I want to say a humongous thank you to everybody who's been supporting us on Patreon. You guys are amazing. We're at 80-some. I don't have the number in front of me. We're about 84 backers. Please, if you love the show, consider heading to weeklyspooky.com, clicking on Patreon, and supporting us for as little as $1 a month. It really does allow the show to keep rolling and rolling for another 140-some episodes. And speaking of thanks, I want to say an extra special thanks to our Patreon podcast boosters, folks who pay just a little bit extra to hear their names on the show. They are Christopher Sullivan, Gino Lyons, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, and Kevin Fry. Thank you all so much. And if you want to hear your name on the program, just go to weeklyspooky.com. Click on Patreon and select any tier over $15 a month. But remember, for as little as $1 a month, you get bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and so much more. And I really can't thank you enough for supporting the show. But anyway, my friends, it's getting hot outside, so I need to go cool down by preparing next week's episode. So until then, my friends, stay safe and stay cool. For our executive producer, Rob Fields, our composer, Ray Mattis, and our producer, Dan Wilder, I will talk at you next week.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.